Chapter 7, Dancing with the Right Girl. It's not good for the man to be alone. Remember, Ginger Rogers did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards and in high heels. Faith Whittlesey. The DJ was spinning the records, and the room was filled with energy, excitement, and enthusiasm. As I walked into the cafeteria of the Roger Q. Mills Elementary School in Dallas for the sixth grade prom. This was an important day for me because this was my first dance ever. I had always been a shy, quiet, conservative young man that did not start any trouble and did not want anyone else to either. This warm spring night was different, though. I was in the sixth grade with my best suit on and hanging with the good fellas from Mrs. Pryor's homeroom when it happened. The slow music began to play, and I got the courage to ask Sean Smith to dance. Now remember, this is my first dance, and I am not familiar with the moves to woo a young lady on the dance floor, but I figured on a slow song, I couldn't do too bad if I just kept moving from side to side. I made it through that song and thought that hanging with Sean and girls in general was not as bad as I thought. After a few weeks of convincing Sean to be my girlfriend, I had the privilege of carrying her books and buying her chocolate milk in the cafeteria, only later to find out that I was not the only milkman in the school. It was at that moment that I realized that it is important to dance with the right girl. You see, Sean was a little what my mother would call fast, which meant I was probably too slow for her. Hey, but we have all heard that opposites attract, right? Sean should have taught me a lesson, but I did not learn it in the sixth grade or even the 11th. You see, for the next two decades of my life, I would have the challenge of dancing with the right girl. By the time I arrived in junior high, I attended the seventh grade dance at Oliver Wendell Holmes Middle School, where I met Bridget. Now, Bridget was cool, but I did not like her like that because she was a little late bloomer. You see, once I realized that being with the ladies was cool, I wanted to be around the pretty girls who were really blessed, if you know what I mean. Well, as blessed as they could be in the seventh grade. Bridget was nice, but I was not that attracted to her because she, well, you know, she was just okay. Now, as fate would have it, Bridget and I attended the same high school, and when I wanted to dance with her in high school, she treated me like I treated her when we were in junior high. She had blossomed in all the right ways that a guy likes, but she showed me that payback is hard. It also happened that Sean and I met again, and we decided to try being boyfriend and girlfriend again. This was great until one day, while riding home from school, I saw Sean walking with another young man that I knew, and it broke my high school heart. After that encounter, I did what any young-blooded American male would do. I asked her if it was her and what was going on. And like many young-blooded ladies, she told me a bold-faced lie and said it wasn't her. Now, because I really, really, really did not want it to be her, I said okay and believed her. Some of you already know where this is going. Yes, the next week, I saw the same thing happen again, and of course, she denied it. But by the third time, she finally confessed and said she did not want to date me anymore. We went on to give each other our jackets back, and I realized that I still did not have the right girl. After Sean, I encountered many beautiful young ladies who all wanted to be my friend, but none of them wanted to be my girlfriend. I have six sisters and several male friends, and I was not looking for another of either one. Nonetheless, this pattern went on for the duration of my high school and early college life until I was introduced to a sorority girl through a mutual friend. I was focused on my faith and playing college football, and this young lady inquired about me from one of my lineman buddies, and we soon began to date. Tammy informed me that she was looking for a godly man who was different. Now, Tammy was not that involved in church or God at the time, but she seemed to like me, and she began going to church more and more as we dated. After about a year, we decided to get married, and we were married shortly thereafter. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why would you get married so young in this day and time? That's a good question, and all I can tell you now is that I was a young 21-year-old godly virgin man who wanted to please God so desperately and do things right in God's eyes that I believed marriage was the right thing to do for two people who are in love and living their lives according to God's word. I believe that coupled with the fact that I had finally danced with a cool chick who didn't want to just be my friend, but wanted me because I was not a roughneck, and her being in a search of a godly man was the perfect storm for the decision. I did not have much counsel at all before getting married, but knew I was ready. In my final semester of college, I got married and was on the road to living happily ever after. We married in August, and I went on to graduate in December. I took my first management job in January and was enjoying life in our one-bedroom apartment in Carrollton, Texas. It was during this time that I had the dream and received my calling. See chapter 1. Life began to move much faster after that. We had my son 1 year and 7 months after we were married, followed by my daughter 2 years later. Believe it or not, with all the fast changes, we were married for over 7 years. During the seventh year, I am not sure if she had an itch or what happened, but it was during this time that she filed for divorce, citing irreconcilable differences. At this juncture, my world changed dramatically. As a pastor now, an educator, I was shell-shocked and didn't quite know how to move forward. So I preached through my pain. See chapter 2. I was devastated. What would my life look like now? For the guy who always did things right, I had to deal with a wrong result. The embarrassment of being a divorced pastor was more than I could bear. So the thought of ever dancing with another girl was not anywhere close on my radar. As a pastor, I've always attempted to practice what I preach and take my own advice. When it came to relationships of this manner, my counsel has been to those who are divorced not to rush into a new relationship while you are still healing from an old relationship. I encourage divorced individuals to not even consider dating again for at least 2 years after the divorce is final. I bring this up because I began to vacillate between the writings of Paul and Moses. On the one hand, I was very content to remain single, saved, and satisfied, where I ascribed to Paul, where he wrote in 1 Corinthians 7, that he wished that all men would remain like him. It was believed that when he wrote 1 Corinthians that he was single, so that he could attend to the things of God. So on the one hand, I was ready to preach through pain as a single pastor for the rest of my life, beginning at the tender age of 28. On the other hand, I could still hear what was written by Moses in Genesis 2, that it is not good for the man to be alone. My challenge was that I believed God had created me to be a great husband, and I enjoyed being married for the most part. Coupled with that, at this point in my life, I had some history that I did not have before. I mentioned that I was a virgin until I met and married my wife at 21 years old. Well, now I was preaching through pain with some sexual experience, and it was different abstaining without the knowledge of good and evil and abstaining with the knowledge of good and evil. I must tell you that God kept me through it all. Preaching moment. Let me take a little time to talk to you about the faithfulness of God. I have witnessed God keeping me when I wanted to and when I didn't want to be kept. God has a way of exposing his love in your life that if you are not dancing with any girl, he causes you to fall madly in love with him. Looking back on my life, I can tell you with confidence, preacher, that you can live holy and dedicated unto God. If God can give Joseph the strength and the respect to leave Potiphar's wife alone, he will surely strengthen you and me. I am a living witness that 1 Corinthians 10:13 is true. There is no temptation that has taken you, but such is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted above that you are able to handle, but with the temptation will also provide a way of escape. You don't have to give in to peer pressure, society's new norms, or the modern day Delilahs who just want to reduce you to a piece of bread. Look to the hills from which cometh your help, for all your help comes from the Lord. You can be faithful to your God. You can be faithful to your wife. You can be faithful to your children. Let the devil know that greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And somebody ought to say amen. Back on track. Managing my life as a single pastor, see chapter 5. I was back in my place and confident who God was and who I was. Minding my own business, I heard the CD player play another track. This time it was different from any other encounter I had had in my life. I never shall forget the summer of 2002 while working in my office at Northlake College when I received a voicemail from a client who worked at the Dallas Independent School District. I received a message that the coordinator of their GED program wanted to talk with me about placing GED graduates in hotel jobs. Now, let me explain the connection. After leaving the ranks of hotel management, I entered education by hearing the voice of God. After listening to the voicemail, I must admit that for the first time that I can remember, I was attracted to a voice. I set up an appointment with the young lady. We proceeded to meet a couple of weeks later. I never shall forget that this lady knocks on my office door, and when she comes in, I am blown away, and I will tell you why. Along about the 2-year time, I began to say to God that if he were to send me my soulmate, that I wanted her to have several distinct qualities to include several physical features that would also be important to me. To give you an example, I was looking for someone who in a lot of ways was the total opposite of my ex-wife. For instance, my ex-wife was about a half an inch taller than me, so I said to God, if I get to dance with the right girl, I would love for her to be shorter than me. I wanted the right girl to have natural hair, nails, and everything else. More than anything, I wanted her to love God with all of her being. Much to my surprise, when this little lady named Precious began to talk, I was struck with a feeling that blew my mind. And to top it off, she handed me a flyer / postcard with a picture of her on it. This flyer was concerning her ministering at a women's conference that was coming up in Waco. For the first time, I was sitting across from a female who was beautiful and who appeared to love God. We went on to have a wonderful conversation about GED placement and the goodness of the Lord. To make a long story short, we exchanged personal information and she left my office. It took everything in me not to call her the next day, but I waited about a week and gave her a call to see if she would be interested in going out on a date. The response I received was not the one I was looking for. She went on to explain to me that she was excited about having a new male friend in ministry, but she was not interested in dating me, although she thought I was good people. I reluctantly said okay and asked if it would be okay if we kept in touch over the phone, because I really did enjoy meeting her and getting to know her. She agreed for the next 90 days we would have long conversations talking about the goodness of the Lord and learning more about each other. Finally, while we were on the phone on around the 92nd day, she proceeds to ask me the question, would you like to meet up for dinner? I waited all of 5 seconds and said sure and began to plan what she was calling a meeting and I was calling our first date. On the nicest Monday that I had ever witnessed, I met Precious at Bennigan's restaurant. She was old school like me and didn't even want me to pick her up from her place on the first day. I can't remember what the food was, but if I tell you it was the best conversation I think I ever had with a female, I thought to myself, now this is dancing with the right girl. It may have been a little presumptuous on my part, but I brought her a couple of gifts that first night. In a nice gift bag, I had a candle and a book that I bought for the both of us to read together called The One by Ben Rogers and Samuel Adams. The book dealt with knowing when you should marry and identifying one's soulmate. In my attempt to dance with the right girl, as God healed me, I always had the mindset that I would not date a girl that I could not see myself marrying. We talked for hours that first night, and I was on cloud 25. Immediately after that, we began seeing each other and having a ball. I was so relieved that I had danced with the right girl that my nose was open wider than I-635. All went great for several months until we met for dinner at the Four Seasons Hotel to celebrate my 30th birthday. After a great meal and conversation, we sat in the lobby to talk before getting our cars. As we talked, we, of course, landed about where our relationship was heading, and much to my surprise, she stated that she thinks that we should just continue to remain friends. I said, friends? She said, yes, friends, and proceeded to share that she never really recalls God releasing her to date me. You guessed it, I got dumped on my 30th birthday. I must confess, I didn't see that one coming. But what did I do? Yep, preach through pain. I can't even explain to you just how hurt I was, because I just knew God had supplied the right girl for me to dance with, and it was all over. We continued to talk off and on for at least a couple more years. To make matters more interesting, during this time when we were not dating, Precious was invited to speak at a women's conference at my home church, but I did not tell anyone I knew her. While at the conference, my little big sister Brenda sees her and says the Lord told her that she was to be my wife. Brenda did not even know that I knew Precious or the fact that we had been dating. Even more shocking, I was later informed that my cousin Kim looked at Brenda while Precious was speaking and whispered to her that Precious would be a good wife for me. Now, each of my six sisters have their own distinct personalities, but I was shocked to hear that Brenda had pulled Precious into a corner and began to say to her with tears in her eyes that she is the one for her brother. Now, you know this did two things. It made Precious terrified, and it made her think that I put my sister up to it. As God is my witness, that never happened. Now, of course, a couple of days after the conference, we had a conversation, Precious and I explained to her that none of the people there knew that we even knew each other. From that time on, we would meet up every so often, and my hopes would get high, but nothing would change. Finally, something happened in 2003 when we met up and started seeing one another again. This time, she met much of my family, my children, and all was well. So much so, about a year and a half later, we went back to the Four Seasons to celebrate and have dinner. After dinner, I went into the men's room where I had stashed my tuxedo and came back to the table dressed to the nines with a diamond in my pocket to propose to the right girl. I got down on one knee to propose, and she said yes. I was the happiest man on the planet until the following couple of weeks. I should have known something was up when she suggested that we should keep the engagement a secret. And then it happened. It just so happened that we met up at her place during my lunch hour because she wanted to talk. She proceeded to inform me that she had been on a fast for the last several days and had taken off work so that she could clearly hear from God. Then I got hit with a Mack truck. She went on to say that she did not have a peace in her spirit about the two of us getting married, and that God didn't release her to do so. I went on to share that I knew God loved me and I was his man. And we needed her God to get on the same phone with my God. Nonetheless, we both cried for a long time, and she gave me the ring back and wanted just to be friends. Now, before you curse her, understand she had been divorced too, and like me, really did not have a reason as to why her ex-husband wanted out. I also know she really wanted to please God and believe that it was the right thing to do. In any event, so much for me dancing with the right girl. This hurt me to my core, and I was yet again devastated. I did not understand why God had allowed this to happen to me. I did not get mad at God, but I was mad at her and stopped accepting her calls and went biblical on her and said, "It is evident that they are not of us, because if they had been of us, they never would have left us." I finally pulled myself together a year later and didn't see her and began to enjoy dating myself again. I would go out to dinner and the receptionist would ask, "How many in your party, sir?" I would say one, and that there is no one else parking the car or in the ladies' room. I focused on raising my children and preaching. After the time it took me to get myself together, I went back to the mindset that I would remain a single pastor parent forever. It was at this time that I noticed a young lady who I would see on my route to work on the freeway. I also noticed that the same person was at the college where I worked. I generally don't mix business with pleasure, but shortly thereafter we met and I started to carry her books to the car for her. To make this long track shorter, I will get right to the point. Phyllis was an adjunct professor, and when we began to date, I shared the story of my last relationship being a roller coaster and that I was finally done with her. Phyllis also shared with me that she had never been married and didn't have any children, but if we dated and became serious, and if I asked her to marry me, she would without any hesitation. It's funny that Phyllis was short like Precious and really reminded me a lot of her in a lot of ways, except that she was not in the ministry. As a matter of fact, she was Catholic. Now, during this time, I was in transition from leaving my first church to planning a new church in Grand Prairie. After dating Phyllis for a year, you guessed it again, we got married. I sighed a sigh of relief and thought, man, this was a long journey to dance with the right girl. This time, prior to marriage, we went to counseling, and I even visited her church on occasion to see for myself the practice and doctrines of the Catholic faith. I knew we were not equally yoked, but again, we shared that she would attend my church and support me as I planted the church. Years later, here's my advice to any young preacher or pastor. Please, please, please learn from me. If God does not burn a bush in your backyard and not let it get consumed, do not get married in your last year of college or have a baby within a year or so of a new marriage or get married while you are planning a church. If you are single, that line right there was worth the price of this book. I look back now and say, yes, I preached through pain, but maybe I should have just stopped everything and quit. Truth of the matter, I would have if it had not been for my pastor and other pastor friends that I was accountable to, you know who you are, who when the wheels fell off, I called or went to see and said my wife divorced me. I didn't cheat on her or hit her. She just doesn't want to be married again. Right or wrong, the reality is, I wouldn't be the man I am today if I hadn't preached through pain. After just the third month of marriage, Phyllis shifted in her behavior, and I could tell she wasn't happy. We talked about it and smoothed things out for about 3 more months. I can still remember a conversation around the 8th month of our marriage. The strange behavior that I had witnessed previously returned in months 6 to 8. When she began to work a lot, even on weekends. During this time, she stopped attending the church for about 4 weeks in a row. At this juncture, I felt like we needed to have another discussion. The last Saturday night, I was so furious that she worked all day Saturday and didn't come home until after 10 p.m. that it took everything in me not to go off when she came home. I prayed and felt led to leave it alone until the morning when we went to church and exercised some grace. The next morning came and Sunday was here. As was my routine at the time, I left the kids and my wife at home while I went to the RJC to set up our new church. Upon my return a couple of hours later for me to shower and change so that we all could go back together, I noticed a sight that caught my attention. Phyllis had gotten the children dressed and they were ready for church, and I was ready, but she was still not dressed and sitting on the bed. It appeared to me that there was not going to be an attempt to prepare for service. So I asked her, "Dear, why aren't you getting ready for church?" She proceeded to share that she wasn't going today, so I asked why. And she stated that she did not feel like it. I went on to explain that this would make the fourth Sunday in a row that she was not coming, and that, as the First Lady, that wouldn't look good. I then shared with her in a nice voice that I couldn't make her do anything, but I sure would appreciate it if she would reconsider and come. She declined, so then I said, "Okay, I hope you get better, so I will see you after church. Will you be here?" She said, "If I'm not here, I will be visiting my parents." I said, "All right," kissed her on the cheek, left with the kids for church, and preached through pain. After service, we came home, and I had a funny feeling, so I went to the bedroom and was shocked to see that Phyllis had taken all her clothes out of the closet and moved all her things out. I didn't share with the kids what had taken place, and we went to my mom's for dinner. While the kids were at dinner, I stepped out and called her, and she never answered, so I called her parents' house and finally got to speak with her, and she informed me that she wanted a divorce because she was not happy and she couldn't live like this. I still don't know what she meant by that, and that was the last day that I saw her. I made attempts to see her and call her to no avail. Then it happened. I can vividly recall being in my office at the college, getting up to go to the restroom, and I see a uniformed constable in the hall, and I stopped him and asked him, "Are you looking for me?" Sure enough, he had divorce papers for me. I thank God that he sent me to the restroom when he did, so that I didn't have to deal with even more embarrassment. I failed to mention that during the short while we were married, I was back in court with my ex-wife in an attempt to reduce or eliminate my child support because we had joint custody and a 50-50 time deal with the children. Now imagine this. Out of all of the preaching I had done, I was now in the middle of an expensive custody battle and a separate divorce proceeding at the same time. I had to call my attorney and ask him if he could take care of a separate divorce issue for me. I fought it for as long as I could, but finally signed the papers and still have not seen her once to this day. I crawled up in the fetal position and called out to God like I never had before in my life. For the second time in my pastoral life, I had to meet with my entire congregation and share with them what has occurred in the preacher's life. I then proceeded to ask them if they had an issue with a divorced pastor who was faithful to his wife but abandoned by her, then I would step down. 100% of the new church members said, "Pastor, we are sorry for what happened, but we want you to continue." I called my pastoral covering and again had to share the pain in my life. I preached through pain, but also went to counseling this time and was affirmed by my pastor, the counselor, and my congregation to preach on. After counseling and just sheer reflection, I realized that I was in a rebound relationship with someone who just wanted a wedding and not a marriage as I saw it. The journey of preaching through pain continued. Never in a million years, if you would have asked me how my story would look in 2014, would I have said that I would be divorced twice as a pastor, but I am here to tell you that God's grace is sufficient. Repeat track. 5 years after my second divorce, I received a text message on Christmas saying, "Merry Christmas, love precious." I responded back, and the last message from her is that we should touch base once she was back in town from the holidays. Later, she informed me that she sent a massive blast to her phone and that it was not a personalized message. In any event, I took it that way, and we began dating again, and we married 2 years later, and we just celebrated our third year anniversary. Wow, it took a long journey, but I thank God that I am finally dancing with the right girl. Dance with the girl you brung to the party. As I'm writing this, my mind goes back to Skyline High School, where I met Coach Jimmy Sanders. Now, I shared a portion of my football saga earlier, see chapter one, but one thing sticks out in my mind. At halftime during our games, Coach Sanders would always say, "Dance with the girl you brung to the party." What he was saying by that was, if running the ball got us success in the first half, then we should not switch suddenly to passing only. On defense, cover two was our primary defense, got us to the playoffs. Then don't get in the playoffs and suddenly switch to be a cover three team. It is the same way when it comes to dancing with the right girl. Once you find her, you must take care of her. You have to do the same things you did to get her, to keep her, and then some. You can't dance with your career and leave her as an afterthought. You can't dance with your hobbies and hope she stays in love. You have to make sure the music is always playing. Preachers, it is okay for us to have a date night. I learned all of this while preaching through pain. If anybody needs to dance with the right girl, it's the preacher. Let me just share this with you for a moment. The only thing worse than being single and frustrated is being married and frantically disappointed with your mate for life. Preacher, hear me clearly. The woman you marry will have an impact on your preaching, on your pastoring, and on your parenting. The wrong woman can throw you off rhythm. If the pace is not right in the dating season, please do not expect it to suddenly fall in line immediately after you say, "I do." The right girl just does not look right, but she is the right fit for you. I like to define it like this. If Adam found his rib, then each of us can find ours. Now, please don't misunderstand me. Just because you have the right rib, don't think that the rib will never rub you the wrong way. Just ask Adam. He had the woman that, without a shadow of doubt, God handpicked for him, and the rib still rubbed him the wrong way. Eve, although was God's choice for Adam, Adam's soulmate, his boo and anything else we want to call her, it was evident that she was not perfect. Preacher, just as you are not perfect, you have to realize that your mate is not either. The real question here, however, is, although she is not perfect, is she perfect for you? Does she have the internal and external qualities that match the man you are, and more importantly, the man you will become? Application: defining the right girl. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. Proverbs 31 and 1. Number one, how do you know when you are dancing with the right girl? She will support your vision. She will share your values. She will value you and not violate you. She will build you up and not tear you down. She will be lovable and likable. She will respect and restore you. She will pray for you and push you to become the man God intended you to be. In the Bible, Amos asked a powerful question. How can two walk together unless they agree? It is critical that you both agree on two major things. First, you must agree that there is a God and it's not you. You can't be God for her. You second must agree that her God is the same God that you serve. In addition, here is how you can determine if she is fine. How do you know when she is fine? Number one, she shares your faith. Number two, she shares your interest. Number three, she meets your needs. Number four, she meets your physical and emotional expectations. Here are three additional signs that you know when you are dancing with the right girl. Number one, when she does it for you. Number two, when you do it for her. Number three, when you would rather be with her than any other girl on the dance floor. If you can watch Catwoman with Halle Berry in it and all you can think about is the one next to you, you're probably dancing with the right girl. If she eats off your plate consistently and it doesn't bother you that much, you're probably dancing with the right girl. If you can take her to a jazz club, corporate meeting, and to church and not be embarrassed in any setting, then you are dancing with the right girl. Application. Am I dancing with the right girl? Please read the following statements and check yes next to the statements that you agree with and check no next to the statements in which you do not. My mate, number one, has her own vibrant relationship with God. Yes, no. Number two, shares my faith. Yes, no. Number three, shares my interest. Yes, no. Number four, meets my needs. Yes, no. Number five, meets my physical and emotional expectations. Yes, no. Number six, supports the vision God has given me for life. Yes, no. Number seven, she and I share similar values. Yes, no. Number eight, values not just who I will be, but who I am now. Yes, no. Number nine, is both lovable and likable. Yes, no. Number 10, respects and restores me. Yes, no. Calculate the percentage of yes check marks that you have. Please explain your thoughts regarding any statements that you check no by. Fill in the blanks.